It's the Burt Cohen Show. Boy, does it go on. We are making history, about to happen. Every 4 years in this country, there is an election. Oh, you knew that. Right. It's been out there just a little bit. Well, it's going to be real soon, and I'm very pleased to have with us, hopefully it's a long-standing tradition, and we'll go on for quite a while. We have Rick Fabrizio, managing editor for news at Seacoast Newspapers, Portsmouth Herald.
That's close enough. Thank you for having me back. It's Seacoast Media Group, Portsmouth Herald, and Seacoast Sunday.
Yeah, they still do print, imagine
we
that.
We do.
And people like having newspapers in their hands.
I'm glad they do.
yeah, it's true. Well, we are here in the first half hour to talk about where Mr. Fabrizio thinks things are in this election right now. I think he's got a good handle on it. How long have you been doing that at the paper? And how good do you think your assessment will be?
Well, I have been essentially on staff at the Herald since 1997. So you can go back and run through the presidential elections, and they certainly add up over that time. My assessment is I think really driven by where we are in the Seacoast and in New Hampshire, because we are plugged in. We're very involved. It's not just about the primary. We just have people who are really into politics, and it helps us stay attuned to what's going on out there.
Yeah, I do think that's one thing that anybody who visits New Hampshire recognizes, that we take our politics really seriously.
You notice the political signs on people's yards? Just a few of them.
I've never seen political signs like this year.
It's impressive.
Are you getting the sense that there's more signs than usual?
You know, I have a friend of mine whose father had come through during the last presidential election, and he was involved in high-end politics, and yet he was still impressed by the number of signs that are out there. And it's hard to say there's more than ever, but there is certainly as many as ever before, if not more. And the impressive thing is it starts with the presidential ticket, and it goes all the way down to the county races. I mean, that's what's most impressive about it.
And of course, the old saying goes, signs don't vote. I remember 1984 when Alan Cranston, senator from California, was running for president. He literally had more signs than votes. Mm-hmm. But they do indicate something. Now, normally, I don't think, I'd be curious to hear your take on it, Rick. It seems to me that normally the reproductive rights issue, the choice issue, it matters to some people, you know, people who are really strongly pro-choice, others who are really strongly anti-choice. But in general, it doesn't really motivate people to get up out of their homes and get into the voting booths. I have a feeling this year, at least when it comes to the gubernatorial election between Maggie Hass and Novid LaMontagne, what do you think?
You know, to me, that is, let me preface it by saying that I would always define myself as a fiscal conservative in somewhere between social moderate, social progressive. So to me, I'm left scratching my head as to why Republicans want to continue venturing into this realm of politics, because I only see it motivating people to come out to vote to protect reproductive rights, to protect issues related to women. I don't see a corresponding base motivation on the Republican side. To me, it's a head scratcher. I don't know. I don't care how you add it up. I still see that it's a plus for people who want to protect rights for individuals, and it's a minus for those who don't.
Well, it has been interesting that Ovid LaMontagne has said, "Oh, it's not an issue. It's not topical." He doesn't want to talk about it.
True.
Well, for a good reason.
Sure. We've had Ovid in for editorial board. We've had Kevin Smith in. We also had the two Democrats as well. But with both Ovid and Kevin Smith, they had that same thing. I'm running for governor on the fiscal issues, the budget. I am not actively running for these things, but I say you cannot separate out what you've said previously, what you've stood for previously. You can't run for governor and say, yeah, but I'm not going to focus on the social issues. And even if you do say that, you're running for governor. You have to take a stand. Whether you feel it may cost you some votes or not, you still have to state what you believe in.
And Ovid has clearly taken a stand, as has Maggie Hassan. Mm-hmm. I'd be curious. I think it is going to make a difference, that issue, this year more than other years. And I'm getting the sense, I mean, again, my universe is smaller than yours, really. Mm-hmm. I'm just, a small part of the seacoast. You cover and take the temperature of a larger seacoast area. What do you think between Ovid LaMontagne and Maggie Hassan?
You know, I think that for one, maybe throughout the course of the election, there had been suggestions that Obama would carry the ticket. And I see that as a close race. I see most of the races as being close races. So I don't think anyone can carry a ticket. I think that, Obama-Romney shakes out, that's going to be close. In my opinion, the race between Ovid and Maggie is going to be even closer. Mm-hmm. So if it's 4-point win for Obama in New Hampshire, it's a 2-point win for, I don't know. I think that's really a toss-up, but I think it's within 2% either way for Hassan or LaMontagne.
Well, we'll have to take a measure November 7th because mm-hmm. I have a feeling, and I've heard this in a few places, Maggie Hassan may get more votes than Obama.
Would be interesting. And I think that you've seen and how Governor Lynch has performed through multiple elections, including a presidential election.
Yes.
You saw how Governor Lynch performed in 2010 when virtually all other Democrats got voted out and Governor Lynch stayed strong. So New Hampshire has that history of voting individually on races and not just going down and filling in all R's and D's. That's why I think if you put me on the spot to make predictions, I would, but I don't think it's going to be a one-party sweep down the ticket in either side.
Interesting. We're talking with Rick Fabrizio, managing editor for news at the Seacoast newspapers, Seacoast Online, Portsmouth Herald, yep. Bunch of things, includes Exeter Newsletter, Hampton.
It does.
Was it Hampton Union?
Hampton Union. We also have a couple Southern Maine newspapers. It is just real quick shows an evolution of newspapers today because no longer, at least for us in our area, can you really succeed financially with just one newspaper?
Well, yeah, it's a tough market for newspapers, that's for sure. Now, so you're sort of hedging your bets, it sounds like, with the governor thing. You think it's going to be close. Well, what about one of the other big mm-hmm. races, first congressional district. Now, it seems to me, Frank Ginta in 2010, nobody knew who he was, as opposed to what you sense about this year. That was a straight party line ticket in 2010.
Right.
It was this incredible Republican tsunami. Do you think Ginta's negatives have been raised enough, and Carol Shea Porter, he's not loved by everybody either.
No.
What's your assessment of that race?
Well, in my opinion, I think that's the largest margin of victory of the top of the ticket races. I think that Carol Shea Porter could win by as much as 4%. Now, that puts in perspective of how tight I think it will be. I don't do polling, and I'm certainly not an expert, but I've seen poll after poll after poll for the last month, and it's funny how they flip back and forth, but they're all really close. Yes, I think that, and I've said before, it's easy for a candidate to run when they haven't been in office because they don't have a record. Frank Ginta was able to run 2 years ago without a record and only criticized the incumbent for her record. Now he has his own record to be judged by. I don't think that he's very popular. I don't think that 4% is a real beating, you will. But I think that Carol is in the position to win by the largest margin.
Do you think that Carol Shea Porter and Obama, is Obama helping her, do you think? Or is she just, her strength is her strength combined with Ginta's weakness?
I think it's more the latter. I think, again, I think Frank has had his opportunities to cast his votes and to make his statements and speeches while in Congress. I think that he was definitely part of that Republican tsunami. I think that when I think a big part of of that election were two things: fiscal issues and the Health Care Act. Now, there might be a lot of people who still remain in support of reducing spending, get that deficit and debt under control. But if you build your house strictly upon that, and you don't really achieve results, or at least you end up in a gridlock Congress, that desire to control spending is offset by the fact that the approval rating of Congress is so low. It's hard to be that one candidate saying, but the people really like me. It's not me, it's everyone else in Congress. I think that's working against Frank Gintik. He's a member of the Congress that has the lowest approval rating in virtually history. You go so far back that it might as well be the worst one.
It's like 9% or something like that.
It's incredibly low.
It's incredibly low. That's a good point. Now, obviously, the other district, Charlie Bass and Annie Custer, they've been basically running against each other pretty much since 2010 without stop. I'm thinking people might be getting tired of that race. They know both of them so well. But I don't know if you have a sense of that race.
Just what I see on the periphery, because we don't do a lot in the second district. Right. But where, by and large, if you divide the two districts, it's always been somewhat surprising to me that the second district is more of the white-collar Democrats in support of the president. In the first district was more of the blue-collar Democrats in support of Hillary Clinton, if you go back to the primary election of 4 years ago. So I think with Obama on the ticket, I would predict Custer to win that race. And I think you raise a good point of people getting sick of seeing them go after one another. And I think the best example is Angus King running as an independent in Maine, and he's been hit nonstop by negative advertising, and it's not having an impact because I think that he represents an independent candidate, and independent voters or voters across the spectrum are saying, I've had enough. I've had enough.
Oh, interesting. I frankly haven't followed that. I assume King is going to win pretty easily.
Yes, handily.
Yeah, he's. I've been very impressed by him, yes. I have to say. And what about, you mentioned the deficit. And normally, my sense is, normally that doesn't really move people, you know, because you have to get up, get out of your house and go into to the voting booth. And sometimes the weather can be bad. Mm-hmm. I wonder how it's playing this year. The Republicans have talked about it constantly. The deficit, and there have been a lot of ads. People saying,
you've noticed.
Oh, my God. We're going to have to go back to car ads pretty soon, just dominating the U.S. But it does seem that there have been a lot of women on the ads saying, you know, I'm concerned about the future for my children and the deficit. You know, the women have been really, it seems, key to this thing. Rick, do you sense that the deficit is making a difference? Is it resonating with people, unlike it normally doesn't seem to?
Right. I would agree that it by itself cannot motivate people to the polls. But so often, deficit and debt is tied to economy. It's more closely tied to the economy than other issues. I mean, it always has been the economy. It always will be the economy that draws people out. And you saw it good in the three presidential debates. The third one was foreign policy. And anecdotally, I talked to different people and you got a bit of an eye roll that nobody really cares about foreign policy, even though with everything that's going on overseas right now, you would think that it would be higher up on the priority list, but it isn't. That's why, like I was saying, that if the Tea Party Republicans hung their hat on debt and deficit, that's going to be difficult to do again, keeping in mind that 2010 wasn't strictly about debt and deficit, but debt, deficit, and the Health Care Act. Standing on their own, no, I don't believe that is enough to get people out to vote. You always have your party loyalist, but it's always a fight for the independents and the people who would otherwise, while affiliated, would not vote. And that's to find the issues that get them out.
Interesting. As you mentioned it, you know, the Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act was a big deal a while ago, but nobody's really talking about it now. I hadn't really noticed that. That's a good point.
You see it gravitating. It's no longer simply about Obamacare, but it's the whole Medicare issue now. That it's gravitated away from Obamacare, and it's the fights of whether or not the states will take money to expand Medicare. That's where you see that current fight now. But I do think that's also one of those issues that people kind of roll their eyes back saying, I don't use Medicare. It doesn't personally impact me. I think everyone should be aware of these things. But still, it is a standalone issue. It's not going to get the people out to vote.
Oh, wow. Interesting. I'm liking what I'm hearing as a partisan, I must say. We were talking about money and getting people out to vote and what moves people. You're in the news business. I'm not. Clearly, the first presidential debate had a tremendous effect. Mm-hmm. Much less so the second two. I personally thought the president did exceedingly well in the second two. But it doesn't seem to have mattered. Why is that?
Having seen the three of them, yes. I would agree. Everyone, there's no, really no one out there who doesn't feel that Obama lost. He lost the first debate. The second debate, the format was a little bit different. Mm-hmm. And I, for one, was sitting there watching it and cringing at times, you know, joking that it, boy, they're close to fisticuffs.
I know.
And I think that it's difficult for people who are not really, you know, partisans, who really enjoy the sport of verbal contact, to get into that. I think that that second one, where they were so kind of, they came across as angry and they came across very bitter toward one another, I think that may have turned off the people who are not really, you know, those partisans, who are really the political junkies. And then the third one is on foreign policy. It's a tough sell. It's on a Monday night. You know, that's why I think the first one still carries so much weight, because not having the numbers in front of me, my guess is that the viewership declined from the first one to the second one to the third one.
It was still pretty high for all three, but I think that's an interesting point that, you know, the junkies like myself and maybe you, you know, it was great fun, sports. But for those others, you know, the first one, they got a look at Mitt Romney. They had never seen him before, really. This was like their introduction to him, and he was impressive. Yep. He was, and Obama,
he had some painful moments in the second one, in my opinion.
Well, yeah, but it doesn't seem to have mattered all that much. What about enthusiasm? You know, that's one of the things is now, you know, the money has been raised. Mm-hmm. Everything's been done. The identification has been done, IDing your supporters. Now it's GOTV, get out the vote.
It is.
What's
it is.
Your sense of the enthusiasm on both sides here within your readership area?
Well, always within the core supporters, that is going to be there. It's almost like a holiday to market to go out and vote. The independent, the
right,
enthusiasm,
yeah.
I think it's not weak. I'm not saying it's not. I'm not saying that it's weak, but I wouldn't put it on the same level as 2008. I think that was a once-in-a-lifetime campaign, and the turnout that we saw was just historic. It's tough to do historic two terms, you know, two elections in a row, I would guess. Mm. I think the turnout will be strong. I think it will approach 2008, but I don't think it will be equal to 2008. So I think the enthusiasm is just as strong in the core as it was 4 years ago. There's a reason why the messages from the two respective campaigns has changed a little bit down the stretch, because you want to make sure it's get out the vote, get out the independent votes. You know your supporters are going out and voting, right, but you are not sure whether or not you're going to get the independents or the ones who just really don't always take part in a vote. And that messaging, you know, certainly more so in Romney, he's made that push to the center down the stretch, mm-hmm, to try to get into that independent voter base and try to steal. That's where that fight is.
Again, we're talking with Rick Fabrizio, managing editor for news at the Portsmouth Herald, Seacoast Online. What about the economy? The economy certainly is a big deal. Mm-hmm. Now, it's my sense is that this particular part of the world, we've been pretty much immune from the recession here.
Yes. Well, it's good to talk to someone. You know, you would have been here after the Air Force Base closed. Okay.
Yes.
So we know what a real recession is here in the area.
Sure.
Okay.
Early
this
90s.
Recession in here in our neck of the woods doesn't even touch the recession of the end of the 80s and early 90s.
Right.
And New Hampshire has an unemployment rate of somewhere around like 5.3.
Something
like
that.
It's going to be within a point or two of that. You know, you don't really go below 4%. I mean, not for any length of time, and not considerably below that. So we're only a little bit above that. So the economy, by and large, here is very good. I think when you look at the broad perspective too, you understand that past recessions, you know, like in the early 80s, we had unemployment over 10%, and we never went, you know, nationwide, really over 10%. For if we did, it would have been for a month. We had pockets of states that would be over that. So the economy is this complex issue that's hard to distill down to, is it good or is it bad? There have been a lot more positives over the last 6 months than there have been negatives over the last 6 months. So does that really carry the election? It's not as simple as if you look at the George Bush the senior when he lost, or going back to Jimmy Carter when he lost. The economy isn't quite as bad as it was during those elections.
And on the economy, certainly Romney has been running on it as his strength is a business person. That seems to be, you know, something that, you know, connects with a lot of people. That, I mean, you know, the economy hasn't been great under Obama. He raised hopes tremendously. And of course, what a surprise, you know, there's disappointment that he couldn't reach all the hopes. And, you know, the Republicans fought against it, made it exceptionally difficult. But still, I wonder about the economic argument. It seems to me, I'd be curious to see what you think, Rick, about Romney is talking about basically trickle down. That if the very wealthy do well, I mean, he and Ginta both refer to the very wealthy as the job creators. They don't say very wealthy, they say job creators, all of them. Mm-hmm. And it's like people don't have any historical understanding that trickle down has never worked, mm-hmm. will never work. Is that, are people buying into it now? It seems like that knowledge about that is so in the past. Is that his strength?
Certainly, I mean, it's fair to say that his is in the Reagan trickle-down economics, okay? And Democrats are certainly going to point that out at every opportunity. If you flip over, you're going to see the other rhetoric from the Republican side about the tax and spend, and it's almost like trickle-up bureaucracy, okay? Republicans, I don't think, do a very good job of crafting their messaging to pit the two sides, to say, here's an economic plan. You call it trickle-down economics. You know, the Republicans are going to call it free market-based economy.
Yep.
Okay, I don't think that they do a good job of saying, well, you know, what the Democrats propose is, you know, an over-reliance of government for stimulation. And I'm not saying that's a case. I'm saying that's, I don't think message. They craft a good message. So I think they get painted into a corner and they open themselves up to be criticized as being only about trickle-down economics. And the only reason why they haven't pulled out the voodoo economics is I don't think that the vast majority of people are going to have any connection to the old voodoo economics label.
I know. Memories seem to get shorter and shorter as time goes on. It keeps really quick. Now, we were talking before the show began about the county attorney race. There have been a lot of signs for Joe Playa and just a very few for the incumbent Republican. Mm-hmm. Normally, that's not a very high visibility race.
No.
In any sense that if this area largely goes Democratic, that it might carry over there?
Okay. Well, I think, with all due respect, I think that sometimes we're a little myopic in thinking of our area, that Rockingham County is, relatively speaking, a rather vast geographic area.
It is very vast.
And as you move to the outside of the Portsmouth area, it has trended Republican for years, which we had talked about before coming on the air about how my belief that with Reams winning in 2006 and 2008, when those were Democratic landslides, suggest that he'll be strong in this one. But I would say, going into, that's why I'm saying I think these races are close, and I think anyone who makes a prediction, it's difficult to make a prediction without your own political biases involved, and that's understandable.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
but
yeah.
It's such a close race, I think that every single individual election could go one way or the other. I don't think we're going to see a Republican tsunami or a Democratic landslide.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, we just profiled that race of Playa in Reams. And for one, I would say it's one of those strange things that we elect a county attorney.
I know.
Because it should be a nonpartisan position.
Reams, I will say, has been exceedingly partisan in his application of his job. And it's bothered me. But a couple more things. One of the amazing things about the Haas and LaMontagne race has been the House advertisement.
Oh, yes.
Everybody's seen that largely. We're talking about an ad where the Republicans say, Maggie Hassan lives in a $500,000 home. She doesn't even pay property taxes on it. Now, the reality is, her husband is principal at Phillips Exeter Academy. They are required to live on campus. My sense is that could be a real backlash against LaMontagne.
Well, I would agree, because this is not the first time that Maggie's run for office and living in that house. It had come up, I think, as far back as, I want to say she faced Russell Prescott in 2002 for the Senate. I think it was 2002. Don't hold me on it. It was one of the early. It was the first one. And that had come up, and it really never even got to print because it was like, well, wait a minute. You know, she's not like she's skirting paying property taxes. She's living in a house that's owned by PEA.
Yes.
And they're you know, that's part of their compensation package. So, you know, I think at best it's a fringe type of thing. You know, it fires up the Republicans on the side. But to your point, wouldn't it also fire up Democrats on the other side to say, well, you know, if I was in doubt after that one, I don't think that's fair. I'm going to vote for Hassan. It's a risky one. It is.
I think she's going to make it. So on predictions, you think it's going to be close between Hassan and LaMontagne. Mm-hmm. You're saying he's shaking his head here.
I do. I think every single race is going to be close.
But the first district, you think Carol Shea Porter is likely to make it?
My feeling is, and a lot of like what I do is kind of my sign polls. Now, I don't look at political signs on the side of the road because, you know, the candidate himself could have put the sign in the ground.
Yeah,
but when I drive around, and I understand that Seacoast is more Democratic, but when I look at the advantage of signs in front of people's homes for Carol Shea Porter versus Frank Ginta, I see her being incredibly strong here. Hmm. Now, I know that we're more Democratic performing, but I think it goes down to that I don't know that Ginta has made himself a very appealing candidate. And I think it's very difficult in a presidential election to reach independent voters when you get to the congressional race. I think that by and large, the people come out. That's why you see, you know, 20% turnout for a congressional race that's not in a presidential cycle, but you'll see 60 to 80% on a presidential cycle. Right. I think that you see more come out to vote on the Democratic side when you get into a presidential
one. I'm sensing that Carol Shea Porter's voters are going to be more motivated.
Yes.
Got to ask. House and Senate here in New Hampshire, it's been incredibly partisan. I'm going to talk in the second half with a couple of candidates for the House of Representatives. We've had Bill O'Brien, who's been certainly the most controversial Speaker of the House that we've ever seen. Do you sense a real change? Do people get how bullying this guy is and some negatives for Bill O'Brien?
I think the negative.
Is it just the insiders?
No. I think the negativity on O'Brien is so vast that it would pick up even the less politically active voters. I think the negativity is so vast. As far as like predictions on that, I'd start with the Senate because there are so many incumbents not seeking re-election. That would indicate that the Democrats would have the advantage there. I would expect, and I think it's in line with most of the things I've read, that the House would go to Democratic control. The Senate would go to Democratic control.
Gone from 5, right now it's 5 to 19.
Which seems incredible, but there's a big number of incumbents who sought to not seek re-election. And I think that levels the playing field. When the incumbents do not seek re-election, you can throw the 19-5 out with the split there.
Right.
Because it's almost like starting over when you have that many people not seeking re-election. On the House, it's always difficult to say, but everything that I've read has said that Republicans will hold it, but by a much smaller margin. And again, then I think it goes down to what is the mood of the voters? What is the mood of the independent voters who come out who didn't vote in the last election? Because there's a lot of people who are going to vote come Tuesday who didn't vote in 2010. What is their mood? You know, I think that one's the House overall is a toss-up, but there's got to be pockets where that O'Brien negativity is going to cost them position after position after position. How much does it stop when you go to divide the 400 by 2? You know, probably somewhere down. I would say that it falls somewhere between 220 to 180. And again, I wouldn't even guarantee that it's going to be 210 Republican. I wouldn't. You could have a total flip. And why wouldn't you think that after 2006 and 2008 is one, and 2010? Voters have shown a willingness to completely throw the incumbents out in New Hampshire.
That's for sure. And as I say, Bill O'Brien has been exceedingly controversial. Yes. And most people, most years, it seems to me, nobody has any idea who the Speaker of the House is. But this year.
No, they do. They do.
Rick Fabrizio, thank you so much. Portsmouth Herald Online, SeacoastOnline.com.
And Seacoast Sunday.
And Seacoast Sunday. Thanks much. It's an interesting time, and it was nice to have a little break from the hurricane. It now was. We're back into it.
It was. Thank you for having me come on, and please get out and vote.
Hey, absolutely. No matter who you vote for, get out and vote. Rick Fabrizio, thanks so much.
Boss Mitt Romney went for a ride, pulled up on the highway side, tied me down up on the roof. Boss, I hollered, woof, woof, woof. Don't look right, don't seem right. Hot in the day, cold all night. Where I'm going, I just don't know. Podol's got to bottle up and go. Well, he had a ride, sure enough ride. Podol, he really had a ride. Not in the front, neither back. Up on the roof like a cock sack. Bottle up and go, sure enough go. Podol had a bottle up and go. Down, I won't spread that story around. All the plans and schemes you got on mine, they think I was lying. And the mean things that you're trying to do, I won't blow the whistle on you. Take me down from this roof, please, Master Boss. The traveling wrong showed up wrong. Old dog was a traveling wrong.
That's Ry Cooder from his album Election Special, and the title of that song is Mutt Romney Blues. Of course, that's about Seamus the dog riding on top of the roof. If dogs could vote, I'll tell you, we would have this election locked up. Well, we are going to go from looking at the macro to the micro to the local issues. And, you know, people really in New Hampshire care, I think, a great deal about who their state representative is, who their state senator is. And the old saying about think globally, act locally. It's true. People really are acting locally. And we ended the last half hour with Rick Fabrizio talking about the rather controversial Bill O'Brien, Speaker of the House. And I'm very pleased to have with me two candidates for state representative from Rye and Newcastle. That's one district. Rye and Newcastle get to send two state reps. One of them is not running this year, and one is a big backer, big, close supporter of Bill O'Brien, and the stakes are pretty high here. So I'm very pleased to have David Borden, who was state rep for two terms, and newcomer Tom Sherman. And Dave has in front of him a postcard that a lot of people in Rye and Newcastle received, and it's kind of negative against Dave Borden. I've seen mailings that are negative for president, for Congress. I've never seen a negative campaign like this. I mean campaign mailings at the state rep level. So, David, you got, you know, the tsunami worked in 2010. You got affected by that. You lost your seat in there. You're running again. What motivates you to go through all this and run for state house again?
Well, partly it's just that you really can get a lot done in spite of a relatively low salary and the fact that they're
relatively low.
399 other people in the House. But we spend a lot of time on individual bills. We spend a lot of time figuring out whether this bill is really going to work. And if you work collaboratively, you can get a lot done regardless of who is in the majority. The difficulty right now, and I wasn't planning to run, but then I realized that the current leadership of the House of Representatives has a social agenda. It's very powerful. It's a national social agenda. And that eclipsed their interest in really providing jobs. In fact, jobs went down during the last 2 years, and maybe I can talk a little bit about that in the future. This particular piece of mailing comes out. It says, basically, it's saying that I've consistently voted against New Hampshire taxpayers and other nonsense. It's put out by an interesting organization called Americans for Prosperity.
And oh, my.
I am an American for Prosperity, but I'm not a member of this particular group. And they're backed heavily by oil, gas, and coal interests. And so their mantra is basically oil, that we don't really need to do anything about global warming. It's really not caused by human beings,
right,
and so on. I'm very, very pleased to be running with Tom Sherman, who's a doctor, who's going to be going to the House at a very critical time, because as the previous speaker said, what happens with the Affordable Care Act is going to be very critical in New Hampshire.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm hoping that Tom Sherman will also be able to talk a little bit about that.
Oh, yeah. And I, David, if I were you, I would be extremely honored that the Koch brothers have given you such high recognition by targeting you.
Well, I'm fascinated by them. They have created two jobs. They're actually two employees of Americans for Prosperity in New Hampshire. Of course, about maybe up to 2,000 people have lost their jobs as a result of the current budget.
Wow. Well, we have, as mentioned, Tom Sherman, a newcomer here, a doctor, general practitioner, is it, or no?
Gastroenterologist.
Oh, yeah, one of those fun things. But it's important stuff. How do you go from being a gastroenterologist to how did you get interested in running for state rep?
When we moved to Rye and to New Hampshire, my focus was to be on my 9-year-old. I have 3 children, 20, 18, and 9, and my wife is a full-time physician as well. So when we moved up here, the plan was for me to go part-time and to be available when the bus came in the afternoon and to put Nick on the bus in the morning, and it's been a wonderful, wonderful experience. That I did not have with my older boys. So over the last year, as I watched what was happening in Concord with alarm and realized that one of the reasons that I moved here were excellent public schools and that those were under threat with what was happening in Concord with the current legislature. And also from the physician standpoint, watching what was happening in healthcare, I realized that I have a really tough time sitting on the sidelines, and so I decided I needed to get involved. And with David as a wonderful mentor and cheerleading squad, I have moved forward with that, and it's been a phenomenal experience.
If you just tuned in, Bert Cohen here. Our guests are two candidates for state representative, both Democrat, amazingly enough, but I'd say certainly recognizing that you got to serve the people of the district. Tom Sherman, newcomer, and David Borden, who will try for a third term, slightly interrupted. We talked a little bit about Speaker O'Brien, Bill O'Brien. Either one or both of you guys address how significant a change is it, and why is it that people are non-political junkies are aware of who Bill O'Brien is. This is really unusual to have such widespread awareness of the Speaker of the House of New Hampshire. How significant an issue is that? And just speak to that and what potential effects could it be if he stays or if he doesn't stay?
I think there are two concerns that he brings up. I think the first, which dawned on me one afternoon while listening to the radio, was that we are telling our children over and over again not to be bullies. We're telling our children, we're trying to teach our children how to play well in the sandbox. And here's the leader of the House in Concord, who is demonstrating that he has a lot of difficulty playing well in the sandbox. And what I hear from the residents of Ryan Newcastle is enough, that we all want fiscal responsibility. We don't want more taxes. But we also want the Democrats and the Republicans to work well together to identify the problems in our state and especially in our community, and then address those with solutions that are based on the values of our community. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, one of my opponents, who's the incumbent, is a member of ALEC. ALEC is the American Legislative Exchange Council, which is another national group. It's a coalition of business and local representatives. They claim to be bipartisan, but their leadership has one Democrat out of many leaders. And what they have done in many states throughout the country is to take a template of legislation and impose it on the states. And my summary of that locally is that this group has put in several laws, or attempted to put in several laws in New Hampshire, that are solutions to problems that we don't have. And yet the problems we do have are not being addressed. And one of the biggest problems there is, how are we going to afford health care in the next 10 years?
And how can the state legislature address health care? What can be done at the state level on health care? Isn't this just a federal problem? At least that's what the conventional wisdom seems to be.
Well, it's clearly not a federal problem. We have 40 to 60,000 uninsured in our state right now, and we pay for them with higher premiums and with the premium care that they get because they go to the emergency rooms.
Yes.
And the current legislature used at least $100 million of federal money that was intended to go to the hospitals to balance their budget and to afford an 11% cut in the state budget. Even Ginta said that this is a tax that he actually chastised Bill O'Brien about. So while taxing the hospitals, they've used the money that was there for uncompensated care, and that was used for the general fund to pay for these tax cuts, leaving the hospitals to foot the bill for the uninsured, as well as the taxpayers of the state. They also, in terms of the Affordable Care Act, they have stated their intention not to accept expansion of Medicaid. Expansion of Medicaid would bring $1 billion to the state.
Wow.
Over the next 10 years. Mm. It would bring, this is 100% a funded mandate. I want to make that clear. It's 100% funded mandate. Right now, our Medicaid coverage is 57% funded by the federal government, and the rest the state has to make up. So we are getting 100% funded mandate for expansion of Medicaid. That will cover somewhere between 35 and 40,000 of these patients or uninsured people who are actually mostly employed but can't afford insurance and are very near the poverty level. Mm. What's critical to understand is that this is Medicaid, and right. Medicaid is a state-run entity. It's not federally run. So one of my opponents says that he opposes this expansion because it is federal money with strings attached coming in and being run by the federal government. That's incorrect. This is going to be run by our Department of Health and Human Services.
Interesting. Yeah, I've heard the Republicans say what you just said. They say they do. They say that there are strings attached to it. And very interesting. That's very informative that Medicaid is run by the state, and it's a totally funded mandate, which is a breath of fresh air here in New Hampshire. We don't always have that.
Right. I would like to make clear that the funding drops to 90%, and that would put us at about $10 million a year at that point. We could easily recoup that by reversing the amazing move that the current legislature did by lowering the cigarette tax by 11%, losing the state $13 million. That's an example of the ALEC legislation that I mentioned earlier. And I find it appalling that our legislature would try to stimulate business growth with a known carcinogen.
Amazing.
What about what is the impact of the current budget on mental health problems and mental disabilities?
Well, it's not just mental health. It's elderly care, mental health. These services have been mostly defunded under the budget that just passed.
What are people supposed to do?
That's a good question. I was talking to a police chief in... I was talking to a police chief locally who was sharing with me that children or kids at risk, the ones who are on the margins of dropping out of high school or on the margins of breaking the law, have just lost their safety net. And we have to really look deep inside ourselves to understand that the price we're paying for this budget cut is potentially long-term a huge price, both in people and also in actual cost to the state.
And, you know, people could say, oh, you know, it's good to be altruistic and care about your neighbor. But look, we have budget difficulties now. We got to make cuts somewhere. David or Tom, what's your response to that? I mean, aside from just, you know, doing that government ought to be nice to poor people, what about the economic arguments? I mean, just the cold, hard economic arguments.
Well, I think there's certain basic services that we have to provide. And some of those have, as Tom said, have been cut back. And right now, the best mental health counseling you can get in the state is after you've been committed to the jail. Mm. So that's the most expensive way of treating mental health problems. Yeah. And a lot of them, I'm sure a significant number of people would not be incarcerated anyway if they'd gotten preventative treatment before or had more accessible treatment.
You know, when you look at the rationale behind these budget cuts, it's that we had, in the words of my opponents, we had our community, our state was not business friendly. So you look at their agenda, which is passing right to work and trying to cut taxes like the cigarette tax and stimulate business. But David and I held a forum of Rye business owners. We had about 30 business owners at this forum. I have no idea what political party they were from. The message was clear and almost unanimous. They care most about being able to provide affordable insurance, health insurance for their employees. They care very deeply about having a talented work pool, which means keeping public education and higher education intact and strongly supported by the state. And then finally, their goal was not to see taxes cut as much as to see taxes well spent. And that happens to be one of David's big expertises or areas of expertise. So when you look at it, if in 2010 they won on a platform of stronger economy and more jobs, they've failed miserably. Our economy, according to CNBC national ratings, our economy has fallen from 10th to 34th.
Wow.
Our business-friendly environment has fallen from 17th to 19th. And if you look at the Department of Labor statistics, our unemployment actually rose as of August 2012 over the year before. And then along with these failings comes a social agenda that's dictated by an out-of-state entity and put on us by my opponents, who are members of ALEC. I think we need to really turn our focus back on the residents of our communities, whatever community we represent. In our case, it's Newcastle and Rye. Get the pulse of the community. Let them help us identify their priorities and concerns, and then let them help us work towards solutions. We certainly have the talent to do that in our own communities.
We're talking with two candidates for state rep from Rye and Newcastle, David Borden and Tom Sherman, seeking to represent Rye and Newcastle. Now, Rye is about three times the size of Newcastle in terms of votes, so I imagine you guys have been spending a lot of time in Rye. And I did want to ask about, you know, business and what makes business come here. We want to be a business-friendly state, and the other side has said, oh, there's just too many regulations. Just do away with the regulations, and they'll come here. What about this, one of the opponents, Will Smith, who is a a close ally of Bill O'Brien, probably one of his closest allies. He put in legislation which passed to cut the university budget by 48%. That, I mean, it's almost like, I can't believe I'm saying that. He, you know, cutting the university budget 48%. What does that do to the business climate, the long-term economic health of the state of New Hampshire?
It's a very interesting question, because probably the best way to ensure that we can reinstate the services is to build the economy much stronger, so that businesses pay business profits tax and so on. And as Tom said, our economy is really lagging. But I went to a wonderful dinner on Sunday night honoring Governor Lynch, and the head of a company, Albany Industry, which is coming here with initially hiring 400 people, but in the long run may hire many thousands of people. He said his main reason to come to New Hampshire was the promise that we would build, through the community college system, help build his labor force, the skills that his labor force needs. That's a phenomenal point, and it's one that the small business people that Tom and I met with said absolutely too. To cut the scholarship money, which was done by the current state legislature, to the community colleges, is absolutely unconscionable. Because these are folks, these are the folks that are going to get those jobs at Albany Industry and other companies moving in. The other thing that where we can grow tremendous amount of business is in the energy sector, because there's a lot of waste in energy, because a lot of almost all our energy is imported from other places. By reducing our energy consumption, we do two things. One is we save people money, businesses money, but we also hire people. And that's another source of business profits tax.
So the state can have an influence on creating alternative energy, realistic
energy? Oh, absolutely. We put in a bill called REGI, and that I don't want to get into the weeds in that, but basically it takes from the ratepayer, in electrical ratepayer, the amount of money that they would spend on a cup of coffee every month. And that goes then to create incentives for renewal, for energy efficiency for other organizations. That created 500 jobs.
Wow.
Okay, so that's a relative. I don't think most people would object to having one less cup of coffee in a month. But it did it. Unfortunately, the House of Representatives voted to kill that program for ideological reasons.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting how many things are done for ideological reasons, like, as Tom, as you were saying, with regard to taking the Medicaid money from the federal government, it clearly benefits us. But I wonder how much of their agenda is coming from the top down in this ideological, you know, just rubber stamp on everything, whether it applies or not.
Well, you know, it's interesting because virtually everyone I've talked to in Ryan, Newcastle, whether they're Republican or independent or Democrat, has used words like fiscally responsible, fiscally conservative, but socially they want the legislature to stay out of their homes and stay out of their bedrooms and stay out of their healthcare decisions. And the ideology that's been foisted on the state of New Hampshire through Bill O'Brien and through my opponent, and actually through the other Republican who's running, should he get elected, since he's endorsed the platform that Will is bringing for the most part, this ideology threatens some of our most important privacies. And one of those, which I find really amazing, is the doctor-patient relationship. One of the reasons that a lot of people opposed the ACA, the Affordable Care Act, was because they misunderstood it and thought it would take away their doctor choice.
Yeah, it was confusing, and the other side played on that misunderstanding.
Yes, but imagine if your legislature wrote the script that your doctor had to tell you when you came in seeking medical advice. That's exactly what they did. They wrote the script They tried to pass a law that forced the doctors to use this script, and the script, by the way, was wrong. It was inaccurate. And if the doctor didn't follow this script, it was a Class A felony. And my opponent voted for this.
Oh, my.
You talk about the most intrusive, invasive legislation I've ever heard of. That should make it so that if I were a woman, which is the target of this legislation, I would be very concerned about how deep into my personal life they are going to go.
I know it doesn't make for good radio to have my jaw drop, but I didn't know that stuff. That's absolutely amazing. For these people who say, you know, limited government and, you know, we're against big government, that's big. I mean, that's incredibly intrusive. So in the final week or so, what are you guys doing to try to win some votes?
Well, we're going, as I've done five times, I think this is the fifth time, going door to door. And Tom and I are going.
People like that.
Most of the time we're going together. And that's really, we both enjoy that. We both learn an enormous amount. And I think people really appreciate it.
Yeah.
And so we're also trying to get out positive mail, encourage positive mail, encourage positive comments, and focusing on getting the vote out. People have got to realize how important the vote is this time around.
I would say whether or not I get elected, this has been an incredible experience. I have met so many wonderful, talented, engaged, and concerned people in Rye and Newcastle. And I hope I've built bonds that will last, again, whether or not I'm elected, for the rest of my time here. I really have appreciated this chance to meet my community.
And if people have more questions, I don't know if you know, State Rep is big enough to have websites or anything, but people can get in touch with you? Or
yes, we both have a website.
Oh, my.
And also this wonderful, well, not so wonderful, mailing that went out, put my own home phone number on it, and call and tell Representative David Borden to support New Hampshire taxpayers, not work against them, and call my number. I haven't gotten any calls yet on that. I would welcome them, but I do think that's a little intrusive, putting my number on a negative ad.
Also, and that's a cookie cutter, by the way. They've done that to a whole bunch of candidates.
Yeah, there's a very sorry-looking family, and I've heard that the same families appeared all over the state.
Yes.
And the thing. The other thing is that David Murray is a wonderful photographer, and he took the picture that they used, and they didn't give him any credit for it. I think that's absolutely despicable. They would take a picture from my website, I guess that's where they got it, and then not give any credit to boot.
And my home phone number is on my website, and I would encourage anybody with any questions or comments or feedback to give me a call. I'd love to talk to them.
Websites again are?
Mine is VoteTomSherman.com.
VoteTomSherman.com. And David?
RSustainableNH, as in New Hampshire, .com.
RSustainableNH.com. Tom Sherman, Dave Borden, thank you so much for being with us today. Very informative here.
Thank you.
There's a lot at stake. And I'm going to go out with, some fun music. This is a song called Politician.
So